startups and entrepreneurial adventures, they have every kind of all the odds stacked against them. They don't have the money, they don't have the brand, they don't have the people. But what they do have is that they, as the technology shifts, as the landscape shifts, they have the least amount of inertia in the old direction. So they have the most flexibility to capture a new opportunity, but you have to have this big new macro environment. And I knew that cloud was going to be that. So then it was, I just got consumed with this idea that what could we build and what could I go and create that would take advantage of this new environment and give me an advantage over all the established players.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Todd McKinnon is the CEO and co-founder of Okta. Okta puts identity at the forefront of security by providing a cloud software that helps companies manage and secure user authentication. In his remarkable story, McKinnon details leaving his safe corporate job with little direction, but a fascination driving him to pursue a startup in cloud computing, a company he has now built that has even gone public and has done incredibly well. I recently caught up with Todd, and I began by asking him about his exercise habits, as he is a self-proclaimed exercise addict. As a former, and I say former because it's been a while, Ironman triathlete, I am also a huge advocate of exercise and its impact on areas of all of life, especially in dealing with business.
Yeah, it's something that I've pretty much done my whole life in some form. And it's really, it makes me feel better. Make me feel like, I don't know, I think this has absolutely no scientific backing, but I think I have overly active endorphin receptors because the kind of the high you get from physical activity, I get really powerfully. It's ever since I was a little kid, I remember running around playing soccer, or whether it was, you know, high school sports or pickup basketball or cycling, or my latest thing for the last several years has been CrossFit. It kind of like, it's a good stress relief. It clears my mind. It makes me feel good. So that's what I mean by addicted. So yeah, I have been able to keep it up. It's a great thing about CrossFit is you can get it done pretty fast. It's like you get in there, work hard, and you don't have to go out and ride your bike for 3 hours, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally relate, you know, and I never thought about it myself. I've been doing the same since I'm 18, and it just makes me feel better. And anytime I'm having a really stressful day or just kind of down, it always has worked to pick me up. So I've always tried to find the time to do it, and glad to actually know that someone like yourself is the same way. And I want to ask you, Okta, and I want you to just give us a little bit of background, because it's your value, or the valuation's $30 billion, right? And I don't know if people really understand exactly what you do. And I just want you to give kind of a little background on it.
We help companies and organizations adopt technology and do it in a safe and secure way. So if a company, a CIO or a chief security officer at a company buys Okta, they think about it as a way to help keep all of their technology secure. So whether that's the applications and the devices and the systems all their employees use to log into to do their work, or whether that's their customers logging in through their website or mobile app to connect to the company's products and services, they think about Okta as helping deliver that technology safely and securely. The category is called identity and access management. And that's the, if you ask the industry analysts, they would say it's all about identity and access management. We would say it's about technology enablement. And I think one of the reasons why we've been successful is because one of the most important things to every organization, one is like getting the best employees and giving them the best tools and technologies to be productive, especially in the past year with COVID and having to do that not only in an office, but in a complete remote environment. And then second priority is, how do we connect with our customers online? Whether that's the hardware store that now has to be online because they have to compete with Amazon, every hardware store in the world, or that's the media industry, which has to get better direct to customer relationships online. And it pervades through every industry. So identity and access management, every web experience or mobile app has to be logged into, and we can help customers power that in an effective and secure way. And that's really what's driving the success of the company, those really macro trends.
Yeah, now I can see why you guys have scaled so quickly. And I mean, it just, to me, it's so amazing because if you look back, maybe if you look back at the time you started this business, and I think it was 2009, it was a completely different world. So take me back then and what gave you the idea and how you actually started the business.
Yeah, it was a while ago, 13 years ago now, actually 12 years ago. I lost count. See, I gave myself another year there. It was 12 years is a long time, especially in tech. I would say that the two big differences, one was the macro economy and one was the technology landscape. From the technology landscape perspective, I was working as the VP of engineering at Salesforce.com. And we were one of the really breakout SaaS, software as a service application companies. We were doing customer relationship management, Salesforce automation, you know, tools for salespeople and customer database online. And we were doing that as an internet site and a cloud service. And that was really successful. And there were a number of other companies that were starting to do these SaaS applications. And also at the time, very first start of really all computing infrastructure as a service. So Amazon Web Services, which is a massive business now. But at the time, it just had a few simple services where they would store information in the cloud and they would give you a computer in the cloud. And the technology shift at the time started to become clear to me was that everything in the future of enterprise technology was going to be done as a cloud service. And that was kind of it was a trend you could see. If you were working inside of Salesforce at the time and you were in the industry, you could see that was the direction things were going. But in the general world, that was not really understood. And people thought of software as something you bought and put on your computer and your company put it in their data center on their servers. And this idea that everything would be done from the cloud and there'd be a choice for cloud for everything was pretty, today that's the accepted norm. But back in 2009, that was pretty, not a lot of people thought that was going to happen. So that's the technology and the industry trends. I think that macroeconomic situation was very different. We, in 2009, we just come out of the great financial crisis. And I mean, this was people don't remember it today, but banks were failing. Massive bellwether banks like Lehman Brothers were failing. And people were unsure of the counterparties to all of the deposits at Lehman and whose accounts at Lehman were being frozen. And when was JP Morgan going to fall? And how was that going to crater and take down the whole economy? I mean, people were scared. And it was and that had a real economic follow on, you know, the banking system froze up and the economy slowed down. And it was a scary time, especially to think about starting a new company.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And funny enough, or not so funny, my first job out of school was working at Lehman Brothers. And when I told my friends and family, I'm leaving to go start a sports and entertainment business, they were like, "What are you doing? Lehman's the safe bet. You'll have a great..." And it's just so ironic, but you know, you do go back to that time. And when I saw you started the business in 2009, and especially also starting the business, you had a great job at Salesforce, which was certainly on the rise. And like you said, for CRMs and cloud platforms, I mean, they were the leader. How hard was that? And what finally kind of made you say, "I'm going to go start this business"?
It was a great job. And Salesforce was coming up on $1 billion of revenue. It was about a year away from $1 billion of revenue. The team I was managing was about 500 people. In the industry, we were the preeminent cloud company. And I had the job that I thought was a very important job there, that was running engineering. So it was a great job. The thing for me was that what hit me is that this technology trend of everything being in the cloud was, you know, nothing's a sure thing. You never know for sure 100%, but it was just becoming more and more likely. I remember the main application everyone uses at work is email, right? I remember at the time, a couple of years before, Google took Gmail and then turned it into a service for companies. And so you saw companies aren't going to install email servers. They're going to use Gmail. It's called Google Apps for Domains, and they're going to use that from the cloud. And you could just see every infrastructure, every piece of technology going to the cloud. And for me, that really was a big opportunity, because I knew that in these big shifts of technology, that's when the monster new companies are created. Startups and entrepreneurial adventures. They have every kind of all the odds stacked against them. They don't have the money, they don't have the brand, they don't have the people. But what they do have is that they, as the technology shifts, as the landscape shifts, they have the least amount of inertia in the old direction. So they have the most flexibility to capture a new opportunity, but you have to have this big new macro environment. And I knew that that cloud was going to be that. So then it was, I just got consumed with this idea that what could we build and what could I go and create that would take advantage of this new environment and give me an advantage over all the established players.
And how'd you come up with the idea?
Yes, the idea actually, I had a bunch of ideas actually. And the hardest thing I did at the time was really quit that job. The idea almost seems easy, but in my life was all organized around my family and then this job. And it becomes part of your identity. You know, it's like I'd worked my way up. I was managing this big group and stepping away from that was a pretty hard thing to give up. And not to mention, my wife and I had just started a family. We had a 6-month-old daughter. And there's, you know, you mentioned people being surprised when you left Lehman. It was the same kind of thing. It's like, you're going to do what? You're going to leave Salesforce, this company that everyone knows about now, and you're going to for what? And so, yeah, that was the hardest thing. And the idea, the main idea was like something that could take advantage of the shift to the cloud. And the actual idea when I left Salesforce was something different than what Okta became. I was going to build a kind of a monitoring and a service that reported on the reliability of all these cloud services. But I had to convince my wife. So my wife's thinking is she's a little bit more risk averse than I am. And her thinking, you either have a job with a company people have heard of, like the Lehman Brothers of the world, or you're basically unemployed. there's no in between. And she was really concerned that this would turn into like a long-term dabbling in starting a company / unemployment. So she took some convincing. And I remember, it's funny to look back on it now once it's quote unquote all worked out okay. But at the time I had to convince her. So I wrote a PowerPoint presentation to pitch her, you know, make my case. And I remember
that's amazing. Amazing. I love it.
She really genuinely thought I was crazy. So my title was My Plan to Quit My Job and Start a Company, Why I'm Not Crazy. And like I said, it's funny to look back on now, mostly because there was some pretty prescient things in there. It said, this transition to cloud is the biggest shift of my career. The biggest companies of the next 15, 20 years will be created in this time frame, which actually turned out to be true. If you look at Airbnb, Uber, Dropbox, there were a lot of Okta, there were a lot of really great companies created. And it was because of this shift to cloud computing and also mobile and other things. So that part all looks pretty smart. But the next 9 slides in the presentation is all about how I can get a job when this inevitably fails. So there's a lot of CYA in there. So if everyone gets all excited about what a visionary I was, you can go back and look and see that even I had a fallback plan.
I would love to see that presentation. And I'm sure so many entrepreneurs could certainly relate. I mean, that's a tough situation. And in a great spot, you're a leader within a growing organization. It's such a tough thing to do. And you finally end up doing it. And what did that next day feel like? I assume you got your wife on board because you're still married, but
Yeah. Still very happily married. She was great. Yeah. It was more of just talking it through and making sure that, you know, making sure we did have a fallback plan. And once we agreed on that, it was off to the races. So it took me a couple months to wrap up at Salesforce. And I remember I still remember it to this day, my last day at Salesforce. And then the next morning I woke up, I had to go to the Verizon store and I had to buy my own BlackBerry.
Yeah.
So I had to turn in my Salesforce BlackBerry. And then I didn't have an administrative assistant and no one was calling me. And it was just me and the birds chirping. That was it. And it hits you like so much happens in your career when you're working for an established company. There's so much momentum and people doing things and progress just happens. But when you're on your own, it's all on you. And it's kind of daunting at first, but you kind of just have to, it sounds a little bit trite, but it's like, you just have to take that step. What can you do every day? For me, it was really sketching out the product concept and then starting to talk to people about it. What do you think of this idea? what do you think of this monitoring service I want to build? Give me your impression. And then through all those conversations, you get feedback on the idea. And then I ended up reconnecting with who the person who became my co-founder through an old connection at Salesforce. And so you start meeting your team and then you start meeting and, you know, informing your opinion and starting to get your rhythm. It's like that first day was lonely, but kind of day by day, step by step, you can kind of walk a long way, so to speak.
Yeah, I love how you talk about so daunting. Having been an entrepreneur myself and starting a new business today that's just really getting going, it's so, when you look at it in terms of the business, it's really lonely. It's hard, especially like, I love how you said, coming from Salesforce where, you know, oh my God, I got to pay for my own phone now. And no one's around, the birds are chirping and it is hard. But I love what you said about you take one step kind of forward each day and you just keep doing that. Because for so many entrepreneurs, I don't know if you agree, the hardest thing is just continuing to push forward because you will continually get thrown to the ground. And I assume when you started, you were probably had a bunch of challenges. Can you speak about any of those? It sounds like you changed the entire business plan.
Yeah. I think one of the, and I think a lot of some entrepreneurs are like this. I'm very logical. My background is engineering code. It's like write the code correct and the code will be correct, right? So logically, you know that creating a company is a long shot. Just look at the numbers. I mean, you know, thousands and thousands are created and 5 years later, thousands and thousands aren't left.
Yeah.
So, you know, the numbers are against you, but you have to be able to suspend that knowledge and suspend that logic and keep pressing forward. I remember I used to tell myself in order to attract the team and to pivot the idea and come up with the right strategy and execute, you have to suspend this knowledge that the chances are that you'll fail. So I came up with this saying, I remember, sometimes you have to believe even when you don't believe. And it's like the logic part is why you shouldn't believe, but just the hope and the perseverance is the part that keeps you going. And for a long time, you have to suspend all the evidence against your success. Yeah, we did have all the evidence against the fact that the evidence saying that you're not succeeding. For us, I think the first big challenge, as you mentioned, was I talked to a bunch of people about this idea. The idea, the product was called SaaSure. So it was like your SaaS applications and it would assure that they were running correctly, right? Constrain yourself if you love the name and you want to cheer the name.
Yes, exactly. It's certainly definitely one you would always remember.
Yes. So I had this idea. I showed a bunch of people, including my co-founder, Freddie Karas, who's still my partner today at the company. I showed it to him and he got excited about the idea. And then the first thing we had to make it through was the fact that I realized that this wasn't the right idea. Talking to people, it was not enough of a pain. People would say, oh yeah, it's an interesting concept, but it was clear that you had to kind of be a big company that would invest in a lot of kind of infrastructure, where most companies that had a lot of cloud didn't want to invest in monitoring services. It was like, they just wanted the stuff to work.
Yeah.
And so we had to pivot. And one of the things we heard over and over was that the basic problem of just logging into all these new cloud services, whether it was Dropbox or Box or Salesforce or many others at the time or emerging Gmail, just the basic login was not working very well. They had separate password for all these things. And when someone joined a company, it was hard to set up the accounts and people forgot the passwords. And these things that kind of would work when it was all on your own local area network didn't work very well with the cloud. And so we were smart enough to have an open mind and listen to that. And also, based on some of our past experience, know that if you built that simple use case, you actually had to build a lot under the covers. You had to build a lot of infrastructure and you had to build a lot of pretty advanced software to make that what seemed like a simple feature, login across multiple applications with a single password. Seems simple, but to make that work, you had to build a lot of complex and a sophisticated platform that you could then extend into a lot of different areas. So it was that insight. It was the insight that our current idea wasn't working and we needed to pivot and then pivot to this new idea, which was identity, which really what became Okta, that had this property that it not only was something that people would want to solve right then, like they had this problem now, it wasn't theoretical, and it was something you could build a big company around long-term because of the work you had to do just to solve that simple problem.
How long were you into the business at that time when you realized this and then switched the plan?
It was, we're fortunate. The cost of a change or a pivot is much less the earlier you do it. It was just, and when we decided to pivot, it was just Freddie and myself, and we had no customers and we had no investors. So it was probably the perfect time. It was only a few months. And companies that go through it later, it's much harder. So yeah, we pivoted. And I remember I came to Freddie one day and I said, I think we should switch this idea. He's like, but this idea is pretty good. I mean, I talked to people, they like it. And we kind of talked it through, and it really resonated with him because he'd been hearing the feedback about the challenge of identity management that the conversations were having. And we talked about it. And like a lot of strong teams do, we debated a little bit, but then we decided and we were on our way.
You didn't have to do a PowerPoint for him.
No, exactly.
That's a good partner.
My decision to totally change the direction and sacrifice our future.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Hey, business owner, did you know that over 4.2 billion people are active on social media now? That means if you want to connect with your customers or find new ones, you need social. If you want to build loyalty and stand out from the competition, you need social. And if you want to make using social media easier, more impactful, you need Hootsuite. Hootsuite is the must-have tool for managing and growing your business on social. Hootsuite makes it easy to find your audience, whether on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, or Pinterest. You can schedule content, publish posts, and track your success all in one place. Millions of businesses around the world are already using Hootsuite to supercharge their social efforts. And now it's your turn. Go to hootsuite.com/HSH to start your free trial and get 50% off your first year. That's hootsuite.com/HSH for a free 30-day trial and 50% off your first year.
And we're back.
Tell me about Okta and the launch. And when was it when you realized that, wow, kind of maybe that pivotal moment? I don't know if it was first couple clients or later on, but when did you really know that you had something?
We made a lot of progress. In that first year, we made a lot of progress. We started working together. We had conversations about the original product. We raised a seed round of capital, $1 million. We hired 5 or 6 of our first employees, and we launched a very basic product that it was simple, single sign-on for cloud applications. So we made a lot of progress. And I would say the next probably first 18 months to 2 years was all about building the features out and getting the first 5 or 6 customers. That all went really well because it was technically we knew how to build it, right? And we knew how to get it to the first 5 or 6 customers. The challenge really came, another challenge really came in year 2 when we'd been around long enough so that the expectations of the investors were starting they were expecting more progress and more revenue and more customer growth. But we really hadn't been around long enough to really let this cloud trend in the industry really wash through. Every successful company in tech is usually an exercise in timing, not too early, not too late. If you, whether it's PCs or web search or social media, it's like a lot of companies were early and kind of died on the vine. And then once the big giants like Microsoft or Facebook or Google get established, it's hard to catch up with them. So in our industry, it's the same thing. There needed to be enough cloud, enough applications for this pain of identity management to be so pressing that people would buy something like Okta. And a couple of years in, the industry and the cloud pervasiveness still hadn't quite gotten there. But the expectations of employees and investors was kind of saying, like, why aren't you growing? So we had one summer that was pretty tough, right? Sales weren't where they should be, and investors were questioning our strategy, and employees were wondering if they joined the right rocket ship because they're looking up and down the street and they're seeing all these other companies take off. And like, and I'm on this company and we're not hitting our sales targets. So that was a pretty hard chapter. And I think every company, some companies that just totally take off from day one don't go through this, but I think every company to some degree goes through a hardship like this.
How did you handle that personally at that kind of low point when this is your baby?
It was pretty hard. I mean, it seems in retrospect, it all worked out okay. So this seems kind of like overstated, but at the time it was really hard. I felt like it was the company, I'd given up my old identity in my career running engineering at Salesforce, and I'd put it all in this new thing. And I convinced at the time 30, 40 people to come follow me. And we'd raised, you know, $10 million for venture capitalists. And it was looking like it wasn't going to work. And that was really where I started saying to myself, you got to believe, because all these people need you to believe to follow you.
Yeah.
If you don't show up and believe, they're not going to follow you. But logically, you looked all around and you saw all the reasons not to believe. And that's when I really instilled this in my head, like, you got to believe even when you don't believe, and you got to keep marching forward. And one of the key things that helped me was that at the time, my instinct was that I'm going to kind of carry the weight of the world. I'm going to take it all. I'm going to make the decisions. And then if it works, it's going to be great. If it doesn't work, it's going to be my fault. And I'm not going to really let the team in to share this burden. And I figured out that was exactly wrong. I mean, what I should be doing is saying, listen, everyone, here's where we are.
Yeah.
This is what's working well. This is what's not working well. You all signed up to help us get through this and help us build this. So here's the challenge. Instead of trying to protect everyone and hold the information, I just shared it all with them and said, we don't know the answers. I don't have the answers. Let's solve this problem together. And that felt scary at first because I might scare them all away, but it turned out to be a really good thing because, first of all, it helped surface better ideas to solve some of the problems. And probably more importantly, it really empowered the team to take it as their own and to take the opportunity and the challenge to make this go forward and make it work. And that was really motivating for exactly the kind of people we needed in the company at that time.
Yeah.
These kind of people that against all odds wanted to build something. So that transparency and that ownership and that builder mindset, it's something that pervades the culture today. And I think a lot of companies are like this. They very early experiences inform the culture for many, many, many years. And that was really the kind of the formative lesson for our culture.
That's a great lesson. And I imagine so difficult to do for so many entrepreneurs who love to control. And it's just such a great lesson in being open and transparency. And it sounds like that was a pivotal moment. When did you actually start seeing tangible results, at least revenue-wise or customer-wise?
I think that one of the things we did well during that time period was we made attainable goals, right? It was attainable goals. We wanted, instead of like what the goal at the time was 100 customers, we cut it back and we said, we just want 10 customers, paying customers live in production using the service. So first of all, like made the goal attainable. Because if you have this team that's really taking the information and signing up for the challenge and doing everything they can to push forward, you got to make the goal attainable. You can't say, oh yeah, keep working hard and in 5 years we'll have 1,000 customers.
Right.
So we made the goal attainable. And then a lot of things were happening. There's no one thing that fixed it. It wasn't like that joke, you know, it's like when your car is broken and your car's not working, you lift up the hood. Like, what do you expect? A big switch that says off, and then you're going to turn it on. Oh, that's the problem. I just had to turn that big switch on and now I'm going to drive away. It's like that with a company that's not working. There's not one obvious thing. There's all kinds of things that happen. And with us, I think it was a bunch of things. And a couple of the big ones were the market was just getting ready, right? The market was more cloud services. More people were, hey, we will use this security service, this identity, this login, this password service from the cloud. Because Okta was built as a cloud service. We said, hey, if everything's moving to the cloud, your identity, the passwords and everything is going to be in the cloud too, which was kind of a crazy leap. But in those years, enough moved to the cloud where all of a sudden there were enough early adopters that said, hey, this is an advantage. I'm going to the cloud. I don't want to manage my own security and stuff. So that happened, which was a huge advantage. And then also the product got a little better. We got smarter. It got more features. It got integrated to more things. We got a better team that knew how to sell it more and more experienced salespeople and marketing. So all those things came together. And I still remember in the fall of 2011, our target for the quarter was like $300,000, which is a tiny number now, but at the time it felt like the most daunting. It felt like, you know, having to high jump over a 15-foot thing, you know, 15-foot pole. And we closed in that quarter, we closed $350,000. And it just felt like we just won the NBA championship, you know.
I love how, as we sit here today, right, only 10 years later, in terms of the valuation of your business now, as we've talked about, and billions of dollars, and you still recall that, it sounds like, so vividly. how big that was.
Well, it's burned, at the time. It's burned in my mind. Like I remember, because we were missing our numbers. Like we, the quarter before we were supposed to do 200,000 and we did like 80,000. And I remember it was, I remember at the time you asked the question, like, when did you know it was going to work? You never know for sure it's going to work. Even today, you're like, we're still working hard and trying to grow and you're never totally sure that everything's going to work. But in that quarter, I remember for the first time we beat our number. We did like over 300,000 on a 300,000 goal. And I remember thinking, this could work. That was the first time I felt that this could work.
That's got to be energizing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. I was believing when I didn't believe, but now maybe I can believe a little bit.
Yeah. I love that advice too. And just kind of fake it till you make it. But, you know, it's so important, you know, what you talk about, and you could have easily have just been down and you know, then all of your employees wouldn't have believed and things wouldn't have happened. And eventually you guys take off and tell me about that. What was that like going public?
By the time we went public, it was quite a number of years later. It was 2017. And it was the natural, every entrepreneur that starts a tech business or even a non-tech business wants to, at some level, the IPO is the ultimate step of success or the ultimate goal of success. And that definitely was true for us. Like we had that goal for a long time and we wanted to be an independent and important, iconic technology company. So we raised venture capital. So you have to go through the IPO step. So we were psyched for it. But we really, at that time, it was important to us that we made sure that we didn't over celebrate it and then miss the opportunity for the next 10 years by getting so excited about the fact that we went public, like forget what we had to do to build the company. So the analogy I came up with was, it's kind of like high school graduation. It's something that you definitely should celebrate and you should go to grad night and you should like hang out with your friends and have fun and you know, do what you do to celebrate it. But you don't want it to be your high point of your life. 5 years later, you don't want to look back and go, man, I really peaked when I celebrated exactly. My high school graduation. So that was the mindset we took. So we had fun. We had we went to the NASDAQ and opened the stock exchange and we had a company, we flew back and had a celebration with the company, but it was all under the understanding that this is a celebration and now we're going to get back to building this thing for the next 10 years. Because now that we've gotten here, I mean, this is all these startups that start, it's like the chances are you're going to fail.
Yeah.
But once you get public, then you can really do something interesting. You have the money, you have more of the brand, you have more of the visibility, you have more of a customer base, a technology stack you built. Now what can you do? Yeah. Now we can build one of the most iconic technology companies of all time. We don't want to look back in 10, 20 years and go, man, we missed that opportunity. So that was the mindset we took and it worked well. I think it worked well. It's a good balance of celebrating the milestones, but always keep looking ahead.
And it sounds like you have started to do that. I know in March, if you can tell us, and I'm not sure if this has been your largest acquisition, but you guys announced that you were acquiring Auth0. And can you tell us a little bit about that transaction?
For sure. Yeah. This is really important for our company. And I'm really, really excited about it. Auth0 is a company that focuses on developers. They build identity management APIs and platform capabilities that it's very purpose-built for developers. So if you're a developer building a mobile app, or you're a developer building a website, you have a choice. You can either write your own code that stores the user profile for your users, logs the user in, connects your one piece of code to other APIs you may call. You have to write all that code. That's the old way to do it. The modern way is that you take something like Auth0 and you use those APIs instead of having to write that code yourself. So kind of like there's a company called Stripe for payments, or there's a company called Twilio for communications. It's an API for developers specifically focused on identity. And it's important for Okta because about 25% of our revenue right now is, our guidance for this year is over $1 billion in revenue. And 25% of that will be for this use case of our customers using Okta to log their customers into their websites. Mm. And so it's called customer identity and access management. And Auth0 makes us much stronger in this market because every company that is building a website is doing that with developers. So having this great developer API is great for our customers, our joint customers. So if you want to, anything you want to do with your customers to log them into your mobile app or your website, or get them authorized to the right services, or make sure that they have the right security, you can do with Auth0 and Okta.
Yeah. For you personally, how, I'm thinking back to when you kind of said you made the jump and it was you, your wife, I think you mentioned a 6-month-old. How has life changed?
She's a 7th grader now.
Yeah, I've got one of those too. Oh my God. So I feel for you a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. But in terms of you and personally and taking that leap, and it's worked out, you've become incredibly successful with your own venture. And how has life changed in any ways, just from a standpoint of kind of what you want to do, values, anything that comes to mind?
I think that my first reaction is there's always change, but then you ask the values question. there's definitely
trick change. Question. Sorry. Yeah, trick exactly. Question.
Definitely started on the answer, but there's definite changes, but I think the values are consistent. I think the values of family and knowing that that's important. One of the things I'm very proud of is I feel like I've built this company and I didn't sacrifice. I kept good balance throughout. My wife may disagree. but I felt like I didn't sacrifice. Some people look back and they regret that they sacrificed so much for what they were trying to do. I felt like I was able to do it with some balance, which is satisfying. And then the other thing is, I feel like I'm really, one of the most satisfying things for me is that I look at the people at Okta and I look at the people that have grown and the people that have been challenged and developed and really have blossomed working at Okta. That's incredibly satisfying for me. And I would never want to be in a situation where you built something in a way that wasn't possible or that sacrificed that. So that's very satisfying for me. So I guess it's a value of at work on the work side, it's a value of building a good company that's good to customers, fair to customers, a good place to work. And we're not perfect, but I feel like by and large, we've done that well. So you put that together with the opportunity we have in front of us and the impact we can have on the world and the industry. I feel pretty lucky to be in this situation.
Yeah. And it sounds like you guys really, just in terms of the cloud's not going anywhere and your business seems to be continually growing. And I'm curious, just from that standpoint, if there is anything now you're looking towards that really might change the landscape or the business that you're in.
For us, it's I mentioned early on, what we're trying to do, our vision is to enable everyone to use technology safely. So it's about technological enablement. The category is identity management, but we're trying to enable technology broadly. And to do that, I think a lot of these challenges of integrating the technology pieces together, I mean, you've run a business, you know, the technology doesn't work well together. The phone or the computer or the podcast recorder doesn't know enough about the other systems, and it's hard sometimes to get the data around, and the security is not always seamless. So there's a lot of potential there. And I think for technology to reach its potential, there needs to be more standardization on how things work together. And I'm speaking broadly from a data, sure, from a security perspective, from a usability perspective, from a UI perspective. So there needs to be standardization. And I think we have a chance to standardize some of that. And to do that, we have to get much bigger. We have to be used by many, many more companies and many, many more people, and bring to the whole industry this standardization, whether that's an explicit technical standard that we may work on, or some kind of technical standards that we may work on our release, or just de facto standards on how things should work together seamlessly. We've already done that in a very tangible way with single sign-on. I mean, because of what we've done, every company is like, we need single sign-on. Like, we shouldn't have to log into all these separate systems, right?
Oh yeah. It's great. I mean, really what you guys are doing is changing things for the better for really everyone, really. And when you look at it in terms of how important we all know security to be these days with how the world is, it's really, to see you doing that is really gratifying from just a standpoint of everyday consumers who is using probably some of this. I'm sure most all the sites I go on or use are probably Okta backed. You guys are so ingrained with so many businesses, but it really must feel good to be able kind of to provide that for just everyday people like myself.
Yeah, it does feel good. And with that being said, I think we only have 10,000 customers to 10,000 companies using us. And that number should be 100,000 or 1 million. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there. So we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to get to make our products and platforms more customizable, more embedded in more things. And so I envision a world where everyone uses Okta. It's just because it's kind of everywhere. And it's just a matter of using it to connect the pieces to make your technology be seamless and make you get great security and great usability. So you don't have to do this trade-off. Like this trade-off now too often is you can get security, but it's got to be 15 checks and
right.
17 block things. And then at the end of the day, no one uses it because it's also hard.
Yeah.
And by getting integrated everywhere and getting connected to every company, every person, we can do a better job there and make the whole technology landscape much easier and much more secure.
Well, Todd, you've got an incredible story. I am never going to forget that PowerPoint story. I might have to be using that on my wife soon as well. So I really appreciate you joining us today on How Success Happens.
Cool. Thanks for having me, Robert. It's great to be here.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. Or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.